Hi everybody, this is Vance Stevens. It's Sunday at coming on to 1300 now, and we're waiting for our presenter, who's David Wynette tonight. I've just started the recording because Ali Bumusa and I have been having a nice and interesting conversation, and we also have Sabrina Wilson with us, and Elizabeth Ann from Grenoble is in the background somewhere. She went off for a few minutes, said she'd come back on the hour, and we're waiting for David to show up. Meanwhile, we're kind of talking just amongst ourselves, and the talk is kind of cohesive and about things that people might be interested in. So we were just talking a minute ago about, well, Ali, for example, I think he joined Webheads about 2002, 2003, something like that. I think you were one of the first people in Webheads, weren't you?
Yeah, I think it must have been around 2001 or 2002, can't remember even. It must be 2002 because I'm one of the Evo online 2002, so it must be thereabouts.
Yeah, so anyway, well, we're very glad to have Ali back with us because, like Ali is saying, the Webheads are just always here. It's like a nice place on a cold night that you can stop in and have a cup of coffee if you want. So, and Maria Bosa has just joined us from Argentina. Hi, Maria. So anyway, well, we were talking about kind of the nature of lurking and how that's kind of normal, and or it should be, that there's nothing at all unusual or shouldn't be anything unusual about a community of practice that's been around since 2002. And it just has a group of people that meet. It's kind of a growing group. I think we're up to about 1,000 registered members now in the Yahoo group. And so it's just a large group of people where something attracts you, you come in, like Ali has done. And and we were talking a little bit about lurking and how we all lurk. We participate maybe in, I don't know, how many groups can you participate in? Maybe two or three that you can be really active in if you're really assiduous. But on the other hand, if you're like most people, you probably kind of skirt, you know, or lurk in maybe 100 groups, you know, or dozens anyway. So that's what got us on to Ali's question. Ali, do you want to repeat your question to bring another voice in here?
Well, Vance, I don't think, I mean, you are not one of us. I mean, you are not lurking. You are on the production line, on the contribution line 24/7. So it's because of people like you that we just stick to these to these networks and to the webheads. So, but most of us probably spend more time just reading other people's pages and reading other people's contributions, and rarely contribute. Maybe because we don't feel confident enough with the bits and of skills that we have. I mean, we never develop our skills, our technical skills, particularly the technical skills. Sometimes we have the ideas, we have the pedagogy, but when we have to face the glitches, the technical, and with no technical support, then you just stand back and back to lurking again. But you never give up. Where I used to work, I started working in Morocco, and the quality, the quantity of the technical support that one could hope for, if any at all, leaves a lot to be desired. Probably now, I think that there's more support around, and there's more there are more incentives for me to contribute and to take part in things, and so that's it.
And now I heard you say you're in Montreal.
Yes, I am in Montreal. I went to UBC for a semester or so. Now I'm settled in Montreal. Yeah, I'm teaching ESL and and the cost.
Yeah, okay. Well, everyone's welcome to join us. We're just kind of waiting for David to come. But basically, we're talking about how Ali is learning just kind of by absorbing. But it's a participatory culture now, and you are participating. I mean, you're here, you're contributing even just by being one of the audience, because it gives us something to talk about. At least we've got two talking right now. I'm sure Maria has things to say, and Sabrina possibly as well. And Elizabeth Ann always has something to say when she comes back. She's still italic, so I think she's away for right now. But Ali was raising the point, how do you manage all the inputs? Because we were talking about how we are participating in some communities or networks, but we're lurking or, you know, absorbing from so many others. There's so much that passes by. Yeah, I was talking earlier about it being media, and that's actually part of the answer that I would give to that question, is if you start looking at the internet as being media, because, you know, for example, take Twitter. When Twitter started, and we had the people who started with Twitter, we only had, say, 10, 20, then we got up to 50 friends. And, you know, after a while, you got 100, and next thing you know, you got hundreds of people. You lose the ability to follow them. Twitter started out for a lot of us as something that was kind of intimate, and you could follow people, and you sort of got to know them. But now it just streams in. You know, as you develop with Twitter, you find out that it just, you know, you have to start filtering. You have to use a client that will divide things into threads, and you'll have to check messages for you. And, you know, so you have to learn a little bit how to use the media. And, of course, there are techniques for that. But part of it is just considering it as media and not as something that you thought of it when you first came into it. Maybe Facebook is the same way. As I get more and more friends, I start just kind of reading through the their updates and click on some. Probably at least half of my friends, or maybe even three quarters of them, are probably from my personal learning network. I don't have all that many friends, but no, seriously. I mean, of course, I've got family members and old acquaintances and colleagues and things like that. But as people find each other, but still, I mean, you've got all this media flowing through. And you really have to treat it as media, I think. It's just like you would the radio or the television or the newspapers. You know, there's so many of, if you're in Montreal, for example, you've got things happening all the time on the media, but you sort of, you're used to that. It's part of the known background, the background that's been there all of your life. So you don't really worry that you miss a radio program or you don't see everything that's on TV. You don't worry about it. You don't even think about it. But when you want to relax, kick up your feet, you turn on the TV, put in the news or the sport or whatever, you know, and you just take what happens to pass by under your view. So you have to deal, you have to make media the same thing. Sabrina has just typed something in the text chat. Let me read that, and we'll bring that in, that view, into the conversation. Meanwhile, anybody else?
Well, I can understand that, Ron. So I'm just butting again. Maybe with the media, with the conventional media, the papers, the TV, the radio. I mean, the range has been relatively limited in comparison with the what's happening on the net, and the you just get overwhelmed. I mean, with the just think of it. I mean, the phenomenon of hyperlinking. You go to one page and it's non-stop. From one page, it could take you to 1,001 references, and that's where the doesn't stop. I mean, it's a bit like doing research, and you start from one single page, one single article, and you branch out into thousands of articles. But with conventional, I mean, you could trace that. No, here it's really, I mean, and there's the equation, time and content. How can you manage, I mean, your time? What kind of skills do you need to develop? It's not, I find the analogy not, well, I mean, while it's valid, it's not exactly the, it's not the same, it's not the, the nature of the medium, of the web as a medium, it makes the demand on our time is very, very different.
Yeah, there's a good book that Michael Coughlin suggested I read, so I started reading it. It's called The Shallows by Nicholas Carr. There's a link to it. It's talking, the book talks about how, it kind of acts like this is maybe a bigger deal than it is, but what is happening is that due to the nature of how we absorb media, we absorb it in smaller chunks and more of it. And so therefore, our breadth gets really large, whereas our depth does not. So it might be that we used to read things in greater depth because there was less stuff that came through our view. But now, like for example, one of your questions was how do you organize or efficiently absorb a lot of what's coming through. One way you can do it is you can use your Google feed reader. So you set up an RSS feed on just anything you want to monitor, and then you pick it up in your Google feed reader. Google feed reader is a really nice way to see a paragraph, the first paragraph of things, and also Yahoo groups. You know, if you follow, for example, the Webheads list, you find that if you read it on the web instead of an email, you'll see all the topics, and you can go through and you can find, if you want to pursue a topic, you can click on that. And if you take your information that way, if you're going to follow, say, 20 or 30 blogs, and you get their feeds and put them in your feed reader, then you're going to read, you're going to get information in a very shallow way, but you're going to get a lot of information. You're going to find out about a lot of topics. And Maria really wants to know if anybody uses Twitter in class. Would you like to say anything about that, Maria? Do you have a microphone?
Thanks. Hello. Happy day, because in Argentina we celebrate happy day today. So happy Father Day to all of you who are fathers. My question is, if someone uses Twitter in the class, because here it's not very much used, unless for celebrities. Some people say that Twitter, some people use Twitter in the class to make students communicate and to pass information. So I want to know if some of you use it. Thank you.
Okay, welcome back, Elizabeth. She says, not me. Using Twitter in the class. It depends on what you consider to be a class. And, Elizabeth, let's take your comment and then I'll continue. Okay, you'll probably get there. I'll continue what I was saying. It depends on what you consider to be a class. Let's say that the last two conferences I've been to, one in India just this last weekend, and a couple of weeks ago I went up to Turkey to a conference, and there are other conferences I've done this with. What we'll do, let's consider the conference to be a class, okay? Because it's pretty much configured like a class. People go and sit in auditoriums and they listen to lectures. And so they'll If the conference has wireless, then they can tweet one another. Ah, well done, Elizabeth. Okay, so as they're tweeting one another, we always set up a conference tag. The one we just used was ELTAI, so you can find some tweets with if you search on ELTAI. And the other one was called Eclipsing Expectations. Let's see, I think that this is the tag, ECLPS. Unfortunately, the searches on those tweets aren't preserved for very long. But anyway, you can still see, maybe if you just search on ECLPS, you can get a flavor of what was going on at the conference. So there turns out to be a lot of dialogue amongst participants who are at the conference. And then another thing I always do is I then make a list. Anybody who posts to that tag, anybody who uses that tag in their tweets, so their tweets show up on those searches during the conference, I will add them to a list. And I think that in that way, you can go to that list and you can see anything that the people who are at the conference and posting there are involved in by tweeting, anything that they're doing, you can see all their tweets all in one place. So those are two interesting ways that you can use Twitter in your class. Is if your students are using Twitter, then they can you can sort of aggregate all their tweets into a list. What that means also is that you don't have to follow them, because that could be a little inconvenient to have to follow your students, or they might not want to follow you. So this list option gives you a chance to see in aggregate all the people who are in the group. Could be a conference group or could be a class. And then again, this ability to use a tag to call everyone's attention to this, to whatever you're tweeting focused on that conference for that class. Those are two ways that you can use Twitter in your class. Any other suggestions or comments? Must say, I'm wondering what's happened with David. He's a reliable guy, normally. Anyway, let's see. Oh, no, okay. Well, somebody else has appeared at Tapped In, but in any event, okay, that's Jeff Cooper. Okay, so another thing you can use also is Edmodo. Have you used that? Edmodo is a really nice. The nice thing about Twitter is that it has a lot of traction, has a lot of legs. That is. Twitter is like Facebook. It's used by a lot of people, so it's part of your normal. If you use Twitter, then probably you check it every day. So it's nice to use Twitter with your class because it's something that people normally check every day. However, you could also use something like Edmodo, for example. Edmodo and Yammer is another one. Okay, so these two are sort of back channel things that work kind of like Twitter. So anyway, and I just checked out today's meet. Elizabeth posted that. Elizabeth, it's too bad you can't talk to us because I'd like to learn more about that. How do you use today's meet? I had a look at it. It looks kind of interesting. Okay, I'll make another comment to answer Ali's question about cutting through all the media that's out there. My course on multiliteracies is supposed to address that. We try to help the participants understand how you cut through that media. Actually, there's a good course model, the MOOC course model. That's one we use in that class in the multiliteracies course. I'll put some URLs here, but are you familiar with the MOOC concept? It's kind of interesting. Do you know what a MOOC is?
Sounds like something to do with Moodle. No?
It's a massive online open course, and it's the kind that Steve Downs and George Siemens announced. That what they do is they'll put on a course, an accredited course at their university, and people can pay to sign up for it, and normally they'll have 10, 15, 20 people sign up for this course. So basically it's a course at a university. But they also open it up to anybody. They announce that they're having this course, and anybody who wants to join can join the course. So if I did that, I could have a small class of people who were paying for it, and I'd probably have 5 or 6 people join the course. But when you're Stephen Downs or you're George Siemens, and especially when you're working together, and you announce that you're going on your networks that you're going to open this course to anybody, how many participants do you think you would get?
Well, I mean, you can get participants from all over the world. I mean, anything from, thousands, I will count them in hundreds or even thousands, no?
Yeah, good guess. They get thousands of people signing up for this course. So they've done this a couple of times. They kind of like the concept. They've developed the concept. Especially Dave Cormier has put out some really nice videos about MOOCs. Maybe the easiest way to... I can find you those videos. I'll find them in a moment when somebody else is talking. But basically what it is, when you've got 1,000 people, thousands of people signing up for a course. Well, come on, if you're really thinking that you're going to run this course like you would another course, then you're going to be up all night. How could you possibly do that? So what I asked George about this once after. I just had a conversation with him as part of our multiliteracies course actually, and asked him, what was his role I already knew about it because they talked about it, but he basically said that his role is to provide cohesion in the course. So I've kind of been modeling my multiliteracies course on that premise. That is, it's the teacher's role to provide cohesion, and it's the student's role to learn. I mean, that's what you're there for. I mean, the teacher, if you're in that massive open online course configuration, you can't really feel yourself responsible, for all these people in the course. I mean, they're responsible for themselves. Clearly, the teacher has to, he cannot be empathizing with each student. He would go nuts. He doesn't have the time. So the way the course works is that, first of all, there's an orientation phase. If you think you want to participate in this course, you sign up for it, and then you look around for the materials, and of course, the cohesion that George is talking about is there. That is, there's some signposts. You can see, we're going to do, every day we're going to have a daily come out, and you can read the daily, and we're going to have these topics, and that's the cohesion. So you orient yourself in the course. And then, once you've gotten yourself comfortable, you announce. You say, "Hi, everybody, I'm Vance, and I'm here because, and this is what I'm interested in." And then the next phase is you start networking. And what happens is that students will network, they'll form little clusters. They'll form clusters, and they won't all participate together. You can't have just one forum with 1,000 people in it. You're probably going to have a couple of forums with 20, one with 10 over here, maybe 100 people are interested in this one. So, people sort of break out into all these little different clusters, and then they start focusing on what it is they want to learn. So that's the MOOC concept, and I think that kind of is a concept sort of appropriate to the age we're in, and it really puts learning in right in the seat of the learner. So it may not be something you can apply in the curriculum that you're teaching within, but at least it's something that you can use with mature learners. Possibly you can adapt a curriculum. And I think a good assessment tool for that kind of course is the e-portfolio. Because when I'm doing my multi-literacies course, I try to kind of run it on that premise that the students should sort of figure out what it is they're going to learn and form a network. And the networking, since networking is such an important way of learning these days, the network is what you take away from the course. Basically, that's how you're going to learn from then on, is you're going to learn through your network. So just by developing a network in a course like that, that brings a lot of knowledge your way when you need it. And an e-portfolio assessment is one where the students decide what it is they want to learn and state what it is they're going to learn and how they're going to learn it, and then they document what they did. And when I'm doing this course for credit, as I do for the TESOL people sometimes, when I'm doing the course for credit, the students get a little bit uptight about the e-portfolios and what do I expect? And I have to model them for them. And, well, good question, Ali. Come to that in a second. Just to finish up about e-portfolios. The students get a little uptight about them because they have no idea how I'm going to grade them. Of course, I don't grade them. If the student does those things, if the student says, this is what I want to do, and this is how I'm going to do it, and this is what I did, then, whatever they do is fine. they pass. Is my course a MOOC? It is, but I fiddle a little bit. I change the massive to minuscule. So, or moderate, or something like that. Anyway, it's a minuscule open online course, and the principle applies equally to the minuscule open online course, I think. Your comments?
Yeah, let me just go to the portfolio idea. I mean, would you suggest any platform for students to use for that? Because that's something I'm trying to use with my students. I'm just trying to explore potential free platforms for the e-portfolios, the students' e-portfolios.
Okay, let me say goodbye to Maria, and happy Father's Day to your father. And your audio is a little bit rough. Maybe you could repeat the question one more time. I think I caught most of it, but I was also reading Maria's mail or her messages. So can you say again, Ali, repeat your question, please?
Yeah, you were just talking about e-portfolios and how you use them and how they might potentially be used in connection with the MOOCs. And I was just thinking of because the e-portfolios is something that I'm trying to explore and use with my students right now. And I'm looking at potential free platforms for students to use to post their portfolios or process portfolios.
Okay, I understood at that time. I just opened the slideshow that I just made for the conference I was at just this last weekend. I'm going to page through and get to the MOOC part. So I'm paging through very quickly because the URLs are just handy there. And my slides are starting to slow. Oh, here we go. Okay, it's slide number 13. So if you page to slide number 13, then you can actually see in the, let's see, if I'm driving the search, do you want to page to slide 13? And then I can click on one of those links at the bottom. But basically, that's what the MOOC is about. And as far, and yeah, I'm trying to do that too. You know, actually one platform that I really like that seems to do a lot of what I'm trying to do is Posterous. Have you ever used that?
Well, no, I'm on page 13 now.
Sorry, again, I didn't quite understand. Repeat it again. Thank you. Oh, okay, yes, you're at slide 13 now. Okay, in the web tour, when I click, I should take you somewhere. So I'll click over on the link to the EVO, to the Goodbye Gutenberg, and that what this does is it takes you to some videos. It should, anyway, if it actually works. Or maybe it's going to take, no, it shouldn't take me to a new window. It should open a new window here. Maybe it's done it already on your computer. Have you got the Goodbye Gutenberg page? I'm still waiting for mine. Hi, Ayat. How are you? And I was just checking my mail as well to see if he's checked in. Don't know how to reach him. Let's see, I'll check all my Skype and all that kind of thing. But anyway, Ayat, we're having a really nice conversation. Ali Boumousa has turned up, originally from Morocco. He's in Montreal right now. And we have Sabrina, who's been texting us, but she's having trouble with her mic. Maria just left. You just missed her. Her father is there, and it's Father's Day in Argentina. So we're just talking about we've been recording for the last half hour, and we're kind of just talking about sort of multiliteracies. And right now the slide that's on the screen is the MOOC concept. That's one component to running courses given today's literacies. And the other component is the assessment part, which is ePortfolios, which Ali is using in his courses. Maybe you could tell us more about how you use them, Ali.
If I can just butt in about the MOOCs, I think that the true MOOCs work because people come from all different disciplines, and so they cluster in discipline areas, whereas we are already, Dongping, everyone is English language teachers. And I think the interest of a multiliteracy course could be made that finally the English language teachers could sort themselves out into things like higher education, young learners, and things like that. I don't know what you think on the mini online.
Well, I think they can work for just about anything. I mean, there are different aspects of, well, I mean, first of all, we're talking about MOOC being a massive open online course, and I'm kind of adapting the concept to a miniature open online course, or a minuscule one, if you like. In fact, even like this example that I've got on the screen here, like in India, because one of their problems is that they have really huge classes. And of course, the students, yeah, thank you. Slide 13. The students aren't really ready. You know, normally when you've got these students who've been in the system where they're 100 in a class, you know, it could be a give or take 60 students. You know, so 160 maybe, or 40 or something like that, somewhere in there. So there are that many students in the class, and because they've been coming up in classes like this, they're not really that used. They don't really know how to deal with, if you give them the learning, you know, what are they going to do with it? They might not understand it. But you'd be surprised, because I met a lot of people in the conference there in India who really articulated very nicely how they did not like that kind of system, and they were expecting a lot more from their teachers. But anyway, so my question there that I was asking, would it work in their face-to-face classes? Or could it conceivably work in their face-to-face classes? Because you know, could you take a class, a face-to-face class? You know, going on your question, Elizabeth. On that question, can you take people physically together, not diverse like in the one that's got thousands of people? Can you take just can it work just in that little in your classroom? Let's say, could you get that many students to somehow start breaking out into clusters and networking with each other and focusing on the things that they want to learn? Would that work? If you want my answer, I would say it might work just as well as what you're already doing with them, because you're surely losing 120 of those 160 students just by not engaging them. But anyway, what do you think?
I would say that as I just said, it really depends on the class. It works on a volunteer only basis, because people have decided they want to learn, whereas a lot of our work as teachers is actually convincing them that they want to learn.
Well, that's exactly correct. It depends on the literacy skills of your students, and that's why I'm saying that, because they've been brought up in the system, they may not really have those literacy skills. So if you just hand it to them and say, okay, now you do it, they're not going to understand what you want. Or on the other hand, some of those students might really think, oh, finally, at last, I've got something to do in this class. But I was trying to click on the slide and open this window. It wasn't opening in the web tour. But anyway, basically, you'll find here Dave Cormier's videos. He's got a set of videos, short little things. They look kind of like the Common Craft videos. They're really engaging, entertaining, simple, and they explain about the MOOC concept. So anyway, I've been playing around with that concept in the courses that I'm able to design. So what else would you like to talk about here? Let's let you guide the discussion, and while you're doing that, I'm going to see if I can locate David on any of our chats.
Ayat, do you have a microphone?
Okay, just go ahead, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
No, because I think that were you not at the conference with where Vance has just come from?
No, I wasn't. No, I was just looking at the slideshow that you posted now. Just
hi, I'm here and the mic is working. Everything is okay, but just because I came late, I couldn't get in the talk. I'm just trying to grasp what you're talking about. I've just heard about the conference in India where Vance has been in the last few days. That's why I thought this is one of his sessions. Thank you, Elizabeth and Adia and Sabrina.
Okay, and then I would say, Ayat, that if it's the first time you've come to... yeah, I understand. Oh, no. Okay, you wish you had... Okay. I did one, and the second one I didn't really follow, and hardly anyone did. And I would like to know at the end of the MOOCs, we talk about the thousands enrolling at the beginning, and I would like to know how many are there at the end. But I forgot what I wanted to say now. I'll go off.
You made a really nice point. And when is the end? I mean, maybe a MOOC, if it goes for a couple of weeks, or if some students participate. I mean, if you participate for a day or two, you know, you've learned something. So if the goal, the MOOC, it's your own goals. That's where the e-portfolio comes in. If you're assessing yourself on an e-portfolio and you learn something you spend 2 days learning something, then you've gained. So it's kind of a beautiful concept. Oh, hang on a minute. Here's Dave Cormier. Just a second.
So I think, well, I mean, the probably its main talking about MOOCs and e-portfolios, maybe what stands against the that, mainly the our concepts of mainstream education. I mean, most of the education systems are seem to resist that. I mean, in the not openly, but in reality, I mean, the practices are such that you cannot implement e-portfolios and MOOCs easily. I mean, thinking of the ordinary teacher in the classroom who has to follow a certain set of guidelines, textbooks, and so on and so forth. MOOCs require a large degree of freedom in terms of creativity, in terms of leeway for the teachers to change and adapt and adjust, and that's not allowed by the mainstream systems almost everywhere. Almost everywhere or throughout the world. So unless you have the credibility, the authority to implement new ideas like those, you're likely just to be to have to manage your way through the system.
Okay, well, I was looking for David Wynette online, and I happened to notice that Dave Cormier was there, and these are his videos we're looking at that I've listed on my page, and I draw a lot from Dave Cormier's inspiration. He's just gone italic. That could mean there's a problem. Are you there, Dave? Okay, you seem to have faded, Dave, and now you've come back. Are you there?
I am here. I was just doing a mic check. Old habits die hard.
Well, that's cool. Okay, I don't know if you're familiar with Learning Together, but that's something that we do every Sunday at about this time. We get together and we have a presentation somebody presents, and so far we've been keeping it going every Sunday since last September. And Dave, on the other hand, has been keeping podcasts going. I've been listening to them too. I listened to the one with Jeff LeBeau just the other day. Seems like you guys are kind of maybe winding that down, but certainly it's been a great effort with edtechtalk.com and World Bridges. Is everybody in the chat familiar with edtechtalk.com and World Bridges? If not, Dave, you might just say a word about it.
Sure. EdTechTalk is a community of a variety of programs. There's probably five or six weekly shows. Sounds very much like what you guys are doing here, where people get together and talk about their practice. There are people from K-12, people from higher ed. And originally the focus was purely on the technologies themselves, and as the industry has changed and as our own sort of interests have morphed, it's become a little bit more theory and a little bit more sort of broad-based discussions about the impact of technology on things like knowledge and learning and that kind of thing. So it's something that's been really helpful for us and something we quite enjoy doing. It's, you know, there have been about 1,500 podcasts is our best guess at this point. And, you know, a lot of people have done a lot of cool things. There's been some cool projects that have spun out of it. But more than anything else, I guess you'd call it a community of practice.
You're famous for putting things into a nutshell. We were talking, well, actually, as I mentioned, there was a presenter who was supposed to come about 45 minutes ago, and we've been sort of sustaining the discussion since then, because even before he didn't show up, we started talking about interesting things. We were talking kind of about all these networks that you mentioned, all the 1,500 podcasts, I can't remember the number, but anyway, it's a lot. All the information that goes through all the time, the information we're exposed to, we came on the topic of how do we manage that. And then I started talking about my multi-literacies class, which is the URL that I that you see if I presume you have the web tour there. It's this one right here. That one goes a couple of weeks. I've got your videos, the ones that you did on the MOOC, that little series of videos, which I thought was very clear. And I was telling them also that you and Stephen Downs and George Siemens had put on these MOOCs, and we discussed the concept and what it is. And there, I just found you. I thought, well, gosh, how neat! Since you seem to be a pretty amenable to other helping other people learn, and you've been in the WebEds and Auction Online Convergence, and your presentations are usually pretty radical, and here we are. You know, I thought, hey, why not just see what you were doing? And you were playing guitar. What were you playing?
I started learning the guitar 6 months ago. It's been one of those things on my wish list for many years now, and this year I finally decided I was going to do it. And I was learning the solo from Wish You Were Here, I'm afraid. Yeah, it's good fun. And it's been it's neat. You talk about all those connections and those places where we overlap. And you know, Vance and I have been overlapping for, well, as long as I've been doing this stuff online, as you know, with the WebEds, since 2002, when that community first started coming together. And you know, it's those kinds of those people out there. I've been out doing this for long enough that there's always these kinds of overlapping networks, and it's neat how my own learning constantly shifts that way. Because you know, when I connect with Vance, I remember all of these other sort of community things that I've done. It reminds me that there's that whole other part of the internet, that whole other part of learning that maybe I haven't looked at in the last 6 months or 12 months, and sort of gets me thinking about ways to do new things over in that direction too. I think, you know, when the people who you work with are the people in your building or the people down the street, it really limits the different ways, unless you live in a very special place, the different ways in which your brain gets pulled all the time. And I find these kinds of random connections, random's the right word, these kind of network connections really useful for my learning, even if only to remember some of the other stuff I've done. Do you know what I mean?
You know, coincidentally, Ali joined our group in 2002, and then he sort of drifted off, but he didn't really drift off, but now he's come back, and he's, so we were just talking about that too, you know, the idea that, you know, you have these groups here, there are so many connections, and it's kind of like you're in your neighborhood, you know, you've got all these shops and places you can go in the evening, you know, there's some music over here, there's coffee over here, whatever, you know, you're walking down the street, one day you stop in this one, but you haven't been there for a while, you know. So it's a real community, kind of like you could almost build it in Second Life, and actually walk around and you know, be there like that. So I have something else I want to say, but let me pass the mic in case anybody else would like to comment.
Well, I can just. I'm just amazed how David can fit in new guitar classes into his schedule. I mean, that's amazing. That shows me. That just tells me that it sends the message that things can be done.
Yeah. My last series of talks have all been about achieving the aha moment. And I think that's something that we are always, you know, having, you know, inciting these little aha moments in each other, you know, which is really, there's so many aha moments I'm sure I've had from EdTech Talks shows, for example, or the whole watching the MOOCs develop, you know, was, there was all this explanation going on as they were going into the first one, for example, with Dave and Stephen and George, you know, meeting together and discussing what they were going to do before they did it and how they were going to organize this. And I thought all that process was fascinating, you know. And what I really liked was the conception. Let me see. I think I put it here on a slide. Let's see if I can back up here. Yes, back up. No, that's it. That's the one right there. Okay, I'm going to I think I got you on a slideshow. I'm just going to pop you over to slide 13. You can see how much you're appreciated here, Dave. Here we go, slide 13 right there. Okay, so there's we're actually linked down to your, you know, where I showed people how the points that you made in the MOOCs. You made those very simply in one of your one of those videos. I think the one that I've referenced there. So that really is, I think, a revolutionary concept. The idea that you don't set up a class and then make a path through that class. I mean, you have to have the cohesion there, but the path is not set at the beginning. It's up to the students to do these five things, and then they make their own path. I think that's a really revolutionary concept. You know, it's a neat application of the way learning should take place in the 21st century.
You know, and it's one that we've been mostly getting wrong, which is kind of fun. Because that balance between structure and if it's going to be anything at all, I mean, the internet in itself, left on its own with nobody calling it anything, is that learning experience, right? You, the user, can sit in front of something and sort of wander through the internet and have that learning experience and structure your own learning. So if you're going to be something other than, this is something I say, you're talking about the things, that the recurring themes and the talks you've been doing, one of the recurring themes that's been coming up for me is this idea of my PLE, my personal learning environment, being the internet. I don't need a system, I don't need a piece of software other than what's already there, because as long as I can learn to knit my stuff online together, or at least remember where some of it is, then I don't need to have it put somewhere. And I try to do the same thing with my own classes when I teach sort of more traditional courses, to say, look, I don't care where you put it as long as you find a way to get it to me. And I don't care how you do that. But if you want some help, you want to talk about some ways to do that, that's fine. But I want you to structure your own spaces because I want you to be able to keep using them. I don't care really about your papers in the sense that they're for you. And if they're not for you, then we're probably doing this wrong. Right? I mean, and this is obviously not, I can't do this with 18-year-olds, but especially with adult learners. I mean, you can with 18-year-olds. It's a lot more of a struggle. With the MOOCs, you know, we've been criticized on all sides, and I think rightly, if you contain it too much, then you lose the network, right? You lose that ability of people to interconnect and make random connections and be able to do new things. If you don't structure it enough, then nobody knows what's going on, and only those people who are very, very comfortable with the internet and with network thinking are able to interact inside of it. So, and when you have, like, right now for the course that's going to start in September, we have 530 people registered, and really we haven't told anybody about it yet. So, you know, we may end up with another course with 2,000 or 3,000 or 4,000 people in it. And when people start falling by the wayside, who's going to know, right? So it's really difficult to keep that, to give people the things that they need in order to be able to follow along. And my favorite thing that keeps happening, they work more through serendipity, my favorite thing that keeps happening, and this is every time this happens, and I've had like 4 or 5 people say this to me now, it always makes me laugh out loud. I have one guy who I know quite well come up to me and criticize me for the ways that the MOOCs were structured, and this is a bad idea, and I don't know what you guys are doing here, and this isn't education. And I said, well, can you tell me what your experience was like? And he said, yeah, exactly. Can you tell me what your experience was like? And he said, well, I did the first 5 weeks, and then I ran into this other guy who I hadn't worked with this way before. I kind of knew him. And then we went off and we had this realization about something. And we went off and did this whole other thing, and I never even finished the course. And I looked at him and I said, I don't care if you finished the course. What did you do with the idea? He said, oh, we've been presenting it all over Canada for the last 6 weeks. Okay, so exactly. So you came for 5 weeks and you invested in a free course. We don't charge you. You chose to come of your own. I never even asked you to take the course. You came and took the course, spent 5 weeks in the course, met someone that you've never worked with in this way before, and the two of you came up with this really great idea that you love. I don't see how this is a failure, you know, because that's the thing. We're attached to structures that can be assessed, and I think there's a time and place for that. I think it's to some degree. I also teach academic writing, and it's a really weird combination because I approach academic writing from a very sort of process oriented standpoint, because I try to give my students the skills that other academics recognize as being correct. And because of that, I have a very sort of clear set of things I want them to learn and be able to repeat, learn, repeat stuff. You know, it's really kind of old school in that sense. And I think there's a place for that. But once you get past things that can be pointed at and identified easily, you know, these kinds of network approaches allow for ideas that I might never even be able to understand to come out from my quote-unquote students. You know, they get a chance to come up with things that I couldn't teach them. It never even occurred to me before. And that's where you have that difference between a course that's, its goal is both creativity, in a sense, those the idea of knowledge being networks connecting, and also it being ultimately student-focused, because I don't even know what you're trying to do, but I'm just trying to put an event into place where those things can happen. So essentially, I'm building a space that you can work inside of and hopefully get stuff done in. And we've done this with EdTech Talk for 6 years, but I find that it's hard for people to maintain their investment in EdTech Talk. We've had people come in and out and in and out, and that's cool. So the MOOC, from my perspective, I mean, George and Stephen both have different reasons for being involved in it, but from my perspective, is an attempt to say, okay, we're going to have a 10-week party, right? And we're going to have, this is what we're going to eat at the party, and these are the things, these are the games that are going to be played, and we want you to come, or you can, I should not say we want you to come, you can come, the door is open. What you do, what you choose to play with, and how much fun you decide to have is really up to you. But we're just opening the door, and you can come in. And we're going to be over here in the corner because we have some games we're going to play, and you can come play with us, or you can play with those other guys over there. But it's going to be 10 weeks long, and if you invest in it, then hopefully you're going to get something out of it. And there are people setting up accreditation models for this. I'm doing some research at my own school trying to work that out right now. You know, and just when we sort of get that model worked out, George comes up with this crazy change course that's starting in September, which is 26 weeks long, has 24 different instructors, and is going to be mind-bending to try to pull together in any kind of reasonable way. But again, the network is out there, the platforms are there, and the question is constantly, like you guys are doing here, like we've done with EdTech Talk, what can the platform offer us that's never been possible before? You know, it's never been possible to randomly meet with people like you guys on a Sunday morning in the midst of me deciding if my fingers are too sore to try that guitar solo one more time, to just have a quick chat about stuff I've been doing. That's never been possible before. And I think that when we look to the internet, see, I've just gone into speaking mode now. When we look into the internet for possibilities, too often, we look to try to recreate what we have in our normal space, which is my criticism of Second Life. After spending 3 years trying to do good stuff in there, I eventually came to the point to the position that it's too much an attempt to try to recreate create the sort of non-internet spaces, and its limitations are that it's not networked enough. It forces single points of connection, rather than allowing the sort of crazy network stuff that the digital could do. And for me, at least, for the work that I'm trying to do, it limits possibilities too much. Yeah, so what this does is it's an attempt of saying, okay, the internet works the way that it works. What possibilities can we draw from that? What have we done in the last 6, 10, 15 years that we can look at and go, wow, the well, for instance, never happened. Can't happen in any other way. You know, stuff like the webheads, and I brought up the webheads, actually, I talked about you, Vance, and I opened the Canadian e-learning conference this year, and I was talking about the webheads as being one of those examples of communities that just, there's no other way of thinking about this from before 10 years ago. It just wasn't possible. 15 years ago, it just wasn't possible. You couldn't have it. You could not have a random pack of digital nomads wandering from fun thing to fun thing trying to learn more. You just couldn't do that. I think that's how I may have described you. That's accurate. But I think that's the real exciting thing, is saying, okay, we're going to try this. I don't know if it's going to work. You know, fortunately enough, we're in positions in our own institutions, in our own lives, where we get a chance to do that. I know there's other people who don't have the internet connectivity and don't have the access or the permissions to do some of that. So we are very fortunate to be able to do those things, but it's really fun. I'll stop babbling now.
Yeah, you not only have to have those things at your fingertips, but you also have to be able to conceive, you know, that this is what you're going to do with it. And I really like, of all that you just said, my takeaway from it is this idea of balance. And that is that if you structure it too much, you got the goose sitting too heavy on the golden egg. And whereas, you know, if you just go off and wander, leave the eggs, they don't know when to hatch. So in this multiliteracies course I'm teaching, I actually came into your work after I'd taught the course, but your work, this slide, this one right here, I'm looking at slide number 13, that one, when I saw that, I realized, hey, this is what I've been trying to do, because there are a lot of courses that will try to explain to people how they should think or how they should, this is how I construct my world, here I'm going to teach it to you this way, you know. And amazingly, students are very comfortable in that kind of thing, because you can usually lay out the steps and you can say, okay, do this, and that. Okay, the students tick it off. A lot of people have checklists, you know, and students are comfortable. I did this, I did this, I've accomplished this. Oh, I got a certificate, you know. And of course, they learn that way. There's nothing wrong with it. But if all courses are constructed like that, then you don't get you don't get the experience that the MOOCs give you, that coming at it from, okay, let's emulate the real world for a while, and let's let you figure out what it is you want to do. Another part of this was the e-portfolio assessment. We were talking about that before you arrived, and that would be, you know, letting students, having gone through the experience, then document it, you know, in some way, and say, okay, this is what I did. Was that good enough, teacher? You know, and the teacher would say, yes, of course, that's what you wanted to do. You did it, you know, and all I wanted you to do was document it. So, but I really like that. That's the key, is to get the balance right, so that that people will actually perform productively, and like your guys who went off and are presenting all over Canada now, you know, of course they succeeded, you know, so they haven't got their minds around how that they actually learned something, you know, because they haven't, but maybe in your conversation with them helped them to realize that. But a lot of the students who take my course, also they fight it a little bit at the first, and I'm sure the students do in your courses as well. They don't really, and in fact, I've heard you talk about this, you know, that they don't really understand what it is you're trying to do. You have to show them, you have to get them into that mindset. And then once they realize it, once that aha moment comes, once they see, oh, yeah, I see, then they'll learn more from that than they would from one of the step-by-step courses. Anyway, okay. I don't know how long we want to go on. I want to say one more thing about guitar playing, but let me just pass the mic on to anybody else who wants to make any last comments, because we've been here for an hour and we just drew Dave away from his Sunday morning. Anybody else?
Yeah, could I just add my comments, Elizabeth Ann, that as I just said, you know, you guys have started, the starting point is assuming competence in using the tools, and in fact, this is not my experience with my colleagues. I work at the university in a science, English for Science department, and my colleagues, I've just started getting them onto the net. I mean, it was easier to get the students to start making wikis than it was to get the teachers into the system. And it does start off, there really is a degree of familiarity with the tools, which is becoming true, obviously, of the younger teachers, but it's still, there's this mega gap, which I'm always, okay, thanks.
Maybe just one more comment. I actually teach teachers for the most part, and the last course I taught face-to-face here was last summer. I don't get to teach as much as I like to, And they were some faculty members, there were some people from K-12, there were some people from community college, there are a variety of instructors, professors, faculty, whatever. I don't presume the knowledge of the tools, I ignore whether they know it or not. And I know that sounds unfair, but I treat knowledge of the technology like I treat knowledge of anything else. That is, if you're going to take the course and you're going to make an attempt to try to do this stuff, then there are things you just need to, there are information you just need to acquire that's part of the process. And I think of the discovery process of learning how to do those things as the thing they actually need to learn. I care less about the content that they put in it than I do about their ability to work their way through how they're going to go about doing it. So when I taught the course last, I had them blogging before I explained to them what blogging was. I did it in a safe space because I didn't let them go public without knowing that they were doing that. But I didn't even talk to them about the technology. I didn't talk to them about the process. I said, go here and try to get this done. And the first 2 days, really, it's a revolt. Like, it's all I can do to keep the class from falling apart at the seams because of that approach. But by day three, what they've done is forgotten about the fact that they have no idea what they're doing, no idea what I'm doing, no idea where they're going, in moving towards just getting it done. And I think you can get away with that, particularly with educators, because the teaching process is a constant process of sort of being stuck and trying to find ways of getting around it. I mean, there's anybody who cares about learning has been stuck in a classroom going, none of the things I have done to try to explain this concept are working. I'm going to have to make something up. At least I don't know anybody who hasn't been in that position. And I think that you can use that to push them forward and get them to the point where they're going to figure that out. And I mean, it does lead to some frustration, but I just tramp over it. It's not that I don't think that the knowledge of the tools is there or not there. I just kind of force them through it. And then they never have to worry about it ever again. It's 2 days of painful learning, and then, you know, the sting is pulled, and then they never have that problem again. But they're mad at me for those 2 days. Oh, are they mad?
Yeah, I get similar reactions in my multiple literacies course, especially when people wander in from these other courses that I described, where everything is set out for them, and then they come into my course, and all of a sudden the crutches are all gone, you know? So, anyway. Although the other comment I wanted to make was about your present learning experience, Dave, and that is that you're just learning the guitar, and my son also. I've had guitars around my house for a long time. I'm not that great a guitar player. I don't play enough lately, but anyway, he's decided to play guitar, so he picks up the guitar, goes online, and what does he settle on? Wish You Were Here. So my son is trying to learn this, and, well, I never knew how to play it before, so we're sort of doing it together, you know? And so now I'm coming up with a pretty mean little Wish You Were Here. Gosh. Well, anyway, Dave, I wish you were here, but then I wished you were here, but then I found you online, and now you are here. So isn't that great? So it's cool. I really appreciate your taking time out of that to come and talk with us. And kind of, we had this other guy, David, who, well, he must have overslept or something. I'm not sure. He's out in California, and I know it's early for him, but I'm not really quite sure what's happened with him. We can always have him in another time, but thanks a lot for filling in. I really appreciate it. Really nice of you to agree to come. And by the way, Anita, who's just joined us, was somebody I was with last weekend in Vellore, India. She put on a really nice conference there. And I was there giving the talk, which is part of the slideshow that you see on the screen right now.
Okay, thanks, Vance. Thanks, David. Thanks, everyone. I have to leave now. Sorry, I wish I could stay longer. But I look forward to the recording and talk to you soon in another session. Bye, everyone.
Okay, we'll hope to see you more frequently in the future. And thanks a lot for coming by. And Dave, thanks. I don't know, I should let you get back to your Sunday. As I said, really nice of you to come by. Nice to hear your voice again, and I hear your voice often on this podcast, believe it or not. I listen to every EdTech Weekly for sure. And it's nice to hear Jeff the other day as well. And I hope you guys will come up with something else that will keep you from being pod faders. And he's gone. Okay. Well, I hope everyone enjoyed that. I think we came up with a nice little replacement, and we're recording it. So Anita can come back and listen to it again. I was with Anita, as I said, in Vellore. I just came from there. She was so kind to invite me out there to give a talk, the one that the slideshow is from. And had a really nice time. So, and Sabrina, nice to see you. And Ali, good to see you again. And what I'm going to do is, it's kind of getting to the time we wind these things down. I'm going to just let the recording go until it goes silent. I'll turn the recording off. And when everybody has left the room, the recording gets recorded, and we can actually post it as part of the online experience. Thanks, everybody, for coming. Hope you enjoyed it. Yeah, Sabrina was with us in the conference. I thought Sabrina, because she was there so often, I thought she was one of the technical help. But she came to almost all the sessions, didn't she? I'm trying to think how we know her. But anyway, that's really cool. Yeah, well, you did join late. I don't know, is your mic working, Anita? If it is, you can talk, and if... yeah, you came late, but we recorded all this, and it was a really nice talk. It was a nice conversation. We had a great conversation. We started 1 hour ago, and we got Dave Cormier in. Dave Cormier is the guy whose name is on that slide that's on the screen right now. And we had a really nice conversation, which would make a great podcast. So are you able to talk, Anita? And if not, it was really great to see you. Really nice to meet you in Vellore. And sorry, I had a problem with Tapped In tonight. There's a Java problem. I'm working on three computers, three different browsers on each computer. I finally made it in on one browser on one computer. It didn't like the Java I had, and it's my work computer. And I can't update the Java, but anyway, it let me in anyway. It said, okay, we'll let you use this Java this one more time. And I'm unable to browse in Tapped In. I got into my office. I can go in the top window to, right now I'm in Webheads in Action, where I can see everybody online, but I can't join anybody. I'm in my office. I'm stuck in my office. I can't get out of my office. My feet are in concrete. And Anita can't talk. So, okay, well, I'm going to say goodnight then. This is the 19th of June, 2011. This is the Learning Together sessions, http://learningtogether. I'm typing as I'm putting it in the chat, pbworks.com. So anybody who wants to learn more about this can go to that URL. And... maybe Anita is pulling the microphone. Does that means that you're setting it up? Okay, we can wait for a minute. I'll start winding down on some of my other computers, and we'll get your voice in on this recording. I think I'll pause the microphone, and then, okay, all right. Well, Anita, really nice to see you. Thanks very much. I really enjoyed that conference. It was great. I had a really good time, and I think I met a lot of interesting people, and it was really nice to meet you and all of the other gentle people there in southern India. And so thanks a lot. So off we go. I'm going to, if you can remove yourself from the room, please do. We need to get everybody out of the room, and then the recording can be made. It's nice to talk to everybody. Goodbye.